the Marine Corps Code of Conduct, and the King James Bible.
I hate snakes, Doc! I hate them!
And may the Christian Lord guide my hand against your Roman popery!
We're on a mission from God.
I'm entitled.
You want answers!
I want the truth! You can't handle the truth! Maybe we should chug on over to Mamby Pamby Land, where maybe we can find some self-confidence for you, you jackwagon!
Coming to you live from his padded cell high atop Bethel Church, the most heralded, the most despised talk show in all of human history. This is the talk show Hell Hates. This is Pastor Mike Online.
Hang on. And let's see, man, let me figure the date out here. In March 16th, 17th, the 18th, Red River Prophecy Conference up in Fargo, North Dakota, or actually it's in Moorhead, Minnesota, which is right next to Fargo. It's almost the end of January. March 16th, 17th, and 18th. This is like, I don't know, it's like the sixth year that they have had me come up there. And we will be going up there once again. And I got to say, I love this prophecy conference. Number one, I have become good friends with many of the guys that are on the board of this particular prophecy conference. Now, this is not run by some professional prophecy ministry. The way they told me when they first started this thing, it was some guys. There's a pastor of a church. I think there's a couple of them. But the rest of these guys are just guys. And even the pastor, they're just guys. But being so far north and so on, there was not any prophecy conferences anywhere in that area. And they are among a large group of people in that area that have a real interest in Bible prophecy, things related to the New World Order, conspiracy theories, anything that goes along with that. The sad thing is, there are not very many churches at all in that area. And there's a lot of churches up there. There are very few churches in that area that ever address issues of Bible prophecy, preach on it, teach on it, do any kind of seminars whatsoever. And it's frustrating because you have people that are going to church and they want to study prophecy. They want it to be led by their pastor and their pastor won't touch it. Well, that's controversial. Or actually, I'd rather focus on how God can work in my life now and how God can solve my problems now. You know what I found? When God called me into studying prophecy, I found that I am a better student of Bible doctrine. I'm a better student of Bible issues of life. I'm a better student of understanding how God works in us as believers. Even today, because the God of prophecy is the same God yesterday, today, and forever. And what I found out is how God is going to do these things in the future. That's how God already does things in my life, has done things in my life. That's how he did it with David. That's how he did it with Abraham, with Moses, with the Apostle Paul, and being a student of prophecy. if you're studying it from the Bible, makes you a student and a disciple of Jesus Christ, and you understand some things about God that you never understood before. So it's something severely lacking in a lot of churches, and it was lacking up there. So some fellows got together, and they said, why don't we try to put together our own prophecy conference? They started out, I think, in a church, and it grew, and they were able to secure this fabulous hotel. I mean, we've been staying there every year now for the past 5 or 6 years that we've been going up there. Outstanding accommodations. This hotel really does this thing well. We have this huge meeting place, enough room for all of the people to sit, enough room for all of us speakers to have our tables so that we can have all of our information out. People can come by and talk with us, the speakers, maybe while another speaker is speaking. We're not trying to be rude, but, you know, sometimes people have questions for the speakers, and, you know, it's kind of hard to fit that in with the schedule. Speaking of the schedule this year, you have none other than Pastor Mike Hoggard, yours truly, a new speaker. I'm not familiar with him, Jay Siegert. I went and looked him up. He's got some videos on YouTube. He's got a website. Seems like this guy has got some pretty good ideas about creation, about the physics, the geology of the creation, and I personally am looking forward to sitting and listening to him. Then you have Paul McGuire. Paul McGuire has been coming there, I think, longer than I have. You can hear Paul McGuire from, like, way far away. I mean, this guy is a zealot for Bible prophecy. My good friend, Christian J. Pinto. Where's my Chris Pinto? There we go. Sound effect. Chris and I worked with Chris several years ago doing a video, and Chris and I have become friends. Chris actually came to our Midwest Bible conference back in 2017, and he is going to be at the Red River Prophecy Conference again 2018. I am looking forward to hearing what Christian J. has to say. And so, if you are able to visit this prophecy conference, please do so. Even if it's just Friday, Saturday, you can't be there Sunday, that's fine. Show up when you can. As always, there is going to be a, they have a schedule here, I think. There we go. The schedule, Paul McGuire, Friday morning, Jay Siegert, Chris Pinto, Mike Hoggard, 2:30, Paul McGuire, 4, and then Chris and Jay again, Saturday, me at 9 o'clock. I hate those 9 o'clock ones. Man, you're just getting out of bed. And anyway, 2:30 again, Sunday. They always let me preach a Sunday morning sermon, and you pray for me as I prepare that. And then, what I think is the highlight of it, 10:30 Sunday morning, having the speaker sit down at a table. All of us got a microphone. Questions coming from people sitting in the congregation, asking us what we think about various things. Very seldom do we sit up at that table and actually disagree with one another. That's what I like. It just seems like these guys that put this together match these speakers up. They're not trying to have some big controversy there. These are guys that believe the Bible. They love the Lord. There is a common purpose. We all serve the same Lord. We might have different functions in our ministry, different ways of doing things, different ways of seeing things, which is one of the things that the Q&A sort of brings out. Paul may say it like this. I may get it and say, well, you know, Paul's got this perspective. Let me tell you what this says. Let me tell you what the Bible says. Anyway, that's what I like about it. So there's the schedule there. You go to Titus213hope.com. Also, something very important. Since these guys are putting this together by themselves, some of them are business owners. Now, that does not mean that they make that like McDonald's or IBM or anything like that. And we're talking about small business. These guys, this is their living. And in years past, God has always provided, it may be within like $50 of meeting the goal, because they secure the room. They pay the hotel room of us speakers. And I say that out of all the conferences I've ever done, Red River Prophecy Conference treats the speakers the best that I've ever been treated before. I don't need to be pampered. I don't need my luxury pedicure at 2 o'clock in the afternoon. It's a nice room. There's always a basket that I think Pastor Fleury's wife puts together of snacks and fruit and so on. I made the mistake the first year. I took the basket home. I thought it was mine. I stole the basket. I'm sorry. Anyway, so I leave the basket now. They pay the airfare for some of the speakers that come in. And so they have that cost, the cost of what advertisement they do. And so they've asked us speakers to do some promotions, which is what I'm doing right now, for this year's Prophecy Conference. But the thing I want you to think about the most, by the way, let me mention this. They're going to live stream this event. They always do. When I'm speaking, we stream it through our venue, which is Sermon Audio. They always stream the event so that you at home can be watching. Even if you can't make it to the sessions, you can sit wherever you are. No matter where you are in the world, you can access this. You can watch it. They also have all of the conference videos on DVD. They have DVD sets. You can buy last year's, year before last, year before last. You can purchase it from them. If you missed last year's and you liked what Paul or Chris Pinto said or whatever. But please pray about an offering. Pray about helping to support. If you like what they put together as far as the speakers, as far as the information that they put out, if you like what they're doing, I'll tell you this. I support them financially. I'm not going to tell you how, but I support this conference myself financially because I believe in it. I've done other prophecy conferences that A, I will never go back to again. B, I would tell you, don't waste your money. Here, I don't have a problem in the world telling you, consider donating to the Red River Prophecy Conference. It goes right into the conference this year. If by some strange chance they have any money left over, I guarantee you it goes into next year's conference. I know these guys. They're friends of mine. And these are brethren in the Lord. And I personally have not ever been associated with a better developed, better prophecy conference than the Red Rivers Prophecy Conference. I'm looking forward to seeing you all again this year. Looking forward to getting on that plane and coming out to Fargo. And I hope this year they've got at least 4 feet of snow like they did the first year I came. Because I keep telling my wife, man, there's snow everywhere in Fargo. Last year's that she's come, not a drop. So I want that 10 below zero with a 20 below zero wind chill. And I want 4 feet of snow up there. All right. Anyway, go to Titus213hope.com for more information. I look forward to seeing you there, or I look forward to you being online, and I won't see you, but you'll see me. All right. What are we talking about today? A lot of things going on in the news. But I had this on my mind. I found this in my Evernotes the other day. I want you, and I'm going, I got to talk about this. I think it's relevant. I think it's important. If you've ever asked the question, why large corporations, when I say large corporations, you understand that if you own a business, and let's say that you're successful enough in that business to be doing well, and you're successful enough in that business to be able, maybe you can open up another business somewhere else in another location and, have a little bit of income coming in. you're nowhere near the level of companies like Walmart. Companies like, I mentioned IBM. Companies like Chase Bank, Bank America, a Bank of America. I was thinking of the old Bank AmeriCard commercial in my mind, which now has become Visa. I'm talking large corporations like that. Corporations that have an international reach, an international influence. And when these companies are marketing, let's say it's Toyota, because I'm going to talk about them for a minute. When these companies are marketing their product, which is an automobile, Toyota sells here in America. I'll be honest with you, I buy Toyota products. I have a salesman that I trust. We've been doing this since, I'm going to say since 1999, because I've had other vehicles, brand new, that were junk, American products. But Toyota sells here in America. Toyota sells in Kenya. Toyota sells in the Middle East. Toyota sells in Europe. Toyota sells in, of course, Japan. Toyota sells in the Eastern nations. You can find, I don't know if Toyota sells in Russia, but you can find a Toyota automobile manufactured locally, literally all over the globe, which means that this is a company that has an influence. And what strikes me is that it doesn't matter whether it's Toyota, Procter & Gamble, or any of these large corporations that have a reach into not just the American mind, the global mind, India, China, Japan, Europe, Russia, Africa, Australia, North America, South America, companies who are telecommunications companies, Apple, Samsung, Google, Motorola, companies I haven't even, don't even know of. These companies, what strikes me is that when they sell a product, in order to get the product from the manufacturer, from the factory, into your hands, they use various means. They use the internet, they use YouTube, they use social networking, they use TV ads, radio ads, print ads. Radio ads, kinda, if they got a really good catchy phrase with it or some catchy music. But when it comes to capturing the imagination of man, the covetous nature of mankind, which is, that's how these companies got rich to begin with and powerful, is that they are able to excite human covetousness by telling you, in some fashion, you have to have this, lust after this, need this, want this. They're not just selling you a product. They're not just trying to get you a car. Or they're not just trying to give you a phone. Or speakers. Or some new music CD. Or a piece of furniture. Or deodorant. Or whatever it is. It's almost like somebody somewhere decided that what reaches people in order to get them to buy your product is not necessarily saying our product A is far superior to product B. Therefore, choose A. Forget B. Don't get B. B's bad. A good. It seems like they're reaching you with something deeper. Something that is deep-rooted into the, I want to say the human consciousness, But the way they reach you is not by way of your conscious awareness. It is done subconsciously. Now, the idea of subliminal advertising. I think some people may have carried that too far. I don't know. I'm not the professor of how the human brain works. Some people are better at it than me. But I do know the Bible. I know human nature a little bit, and I know what's in us. And I know a little bit about how certain companies, I know how magicians are able to do things. I know how mentalists are able to manipulate people to get them to make a choice or a decision or do something that person has no idea why they did what they did or why they chose what they chose. Mentalists can do that. Mentalists can plant ideas in people's minds. I first became aware of this. David Blaine used to do street magic, used to have TV shows back in the late 90s. And people thought that Blaine, because of what he did, that Blaine was like, oh, he's got to have like gods and devils and evil spirits in him. He's got to be doing like real magic because he just literally made this thing disappear. Let me tell you, simply because you can't explain how somebody did something, that doesn't necessarily mean that it automatically must have a supernatural explanation. Because David Blaine started out one of his programs with a card trick. Now, I know a few card tricks. And what he did was, he said, we're going to do this card trick, but I'm going to involve everybody watching the show. And what's going to happen is, everybody watching this program right now, I'm going to make you choose a card. And that card is going to show up, and it's going to be the one that you chose. I guarantee you. And I'm going, you're on, buddy. So he has a deck of cards. And what he does like one of these numbers. He fans through it like that. And he says, I'm going to fan through these cards. And I want you to pick one of the cards, okay, that you see. I'm just going to fan through them. Now, he fanned through them very quickly so that all of the cards were blurred. But I'm going, okay, two of hearts. No way. Nobody else picked two of hearts. So he does the mumbo jumbo. And inside this store that he's standing next to, a storefront restaurant, all of a sudden, the number two of hearts, is sticking to the inside of the window. Now, that's another part of the trick altogether, okay? And it is a trick. It's not magic. It's a trick, okay? An illusion. The fact that it was a two of hearts, I went, and I'm going in my mind going, but that's the card that I picked. But how can he know what I picked unless he's really magic and he has like the way for everybody to see a different program. Everybody watching this program sees a different program and he's able to magically make them see. And I'm going, what's the possibilities here? Well, that's not really possible. So with the magic then of the rewind button, I rewind it. I hit play. Now watch it again. I only have to watch it in slow motion. I watch it. Sure enough, he fans through the deck. I pick the two of hearts again. And I'm going, why did I pick the same card again? Play it again. And I figured out what he did. All of the cards that he's fanning through is blurred. You can't pick a king from an ace out of that deck. Except very clearly, but very quickly, you see the two of hearts, and you see it as clear as you're seeing me now. How did he do it? 52 cards in a deck. This particular deck, let's say, had 53 cards in it. He put the Two of Hearts back to back in there so that blur, 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 Two of Hearts, blur, 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 all you see. He forced you to see the Two of Hearts. And the first time you watched it, you never picked it up. Your subconscious grabbed on to the only clear image that it could see, and it put in the frontal lobe of your brain where you make all your decisions, it put, just for a brief time, because it doesn't last long, Two of Hearts. So that's what I picked, that, and that's what everybody else picked. It's called a force, not the force. It's a magician's force. It's a way that a magician or a mentalist can get you to make a choice on something. They are basically flooding your subconscious brain with very specific information. And there's an argument about how long that effect lasts. Okay? I tend to think that it doesn't last very long, because if he would have said, I want to fan through the deck and tomorrow I want you to pick a card, I don't think I would have picked Two of Hearts. Okay? I think it has to be just like that. Okay? But anyway, here's my point. Why are all these companies, when it comes to marketing a car, they're not just marketing a car. They're giving you logos. But they're not just giving you Toyota Car Company Limited. They're giving you these catchy names for these cars. Like here in America, one of their trucks is called the Toyota Tundra. Now that just, in my mind, I'm seeing the wide open Tundra. Let's say New Mexico, Arizona, Nevada, places like that, where I can get one of these trucks to go way far deep into a place off-road. That's what they want you to think. That's what they want you to think that their truck is associated with. Okay? For a truck like this, big four-wheel drive, powerful pickup truck, they would never call it the soccer mom scooter. Okay? They would never call it that, because that's not who they're trying to sell it to. They're trying to sell it to guys and some gals who want a truck that can go off-road or haul stuff or whatever. Okay? It's not meant to carry guys to, or carry women to, the next book club meeting. You don't ride a Tundra for that. Okay? So these companies spend a lot, they spend a ton of money on figuring out ways of selling you not just a car, a concept, an idea, selling you on a mystery, something that is so deep rooted in us we never think of it consciously, but it's always there. There are certain things in us that sometimes they'll manifest themselves in our behavior, but they're so deep-rooted in us, we don't give them a thought, but they're there, and they have a lot of control and a lot of say over the things that we do. Certain base, what they would call the reptilian brain things. In other words, the very core of our existence means that we must eat, and we must reproduce, and we must dominate. Okay, that's like the core things in all species on planet Earth. They must eat, they must reproduce, and they must dominate or survive somehow. Okay, that's the reptilian brain thing. So, we're going to sell a car, we're going to sell a radio, we're going to sell a TV, we're going to sell a phone, we're going to sell a diaper, we're going to sell some insurance, we're going to sell whatever it is. But we're going to reach in and grab a hold and get control of your need to eat something, your need to reproduce. You know what I'm saying by that? I'm just using reproduce, you know, okay?
reproduction cells. Okay, your need to survive and or dominate, fight or flight type stuff. Okay, so they reach into those areas of our core existence and pull those out of us and get those to make our decisions on what we're going to buy. But then there's another level, a deeper level. Something that they are reaching inside all humanity with imagery, with logos, commercials that speak of certain things that are dormant and have been dormant for a long time, and yet it is now time for it to rise. It's now time for it to come out of hiding. This inner thing in us, that it's time now for it to be presented to the world, a legend deep in history, deep inside of us. Something that's only talking about in myth or fable or legend, and yet it's real. And it's time to show itself. It's now or it's very soon. Things like that. When you hear them talk about get a hold of your inner pancake. Okay? What's an inner pancake? Well, pancake is a metaphor for something that is in you that they want coming out. And it's not just to buy the product. Because we're not, and we're talking about these major corporations now, we're not just talking about getting everybody to buy a car or cell phone. We're talking about bringing everybody around to a leader, a king, a new god, as it were. A god that at one time was used to be the god of the whole world, king of the whole world. But that's only a legend, right? But can the legend be true? Can the stories and the myths and the fables all be real? Basically, they're trying to sell mankind on accepting the Antichrist. Because remember, let's dig into our Bible here. Revelation 13. What does the false prophet do? Does he use guns, knives, thugs, jackbooted, badged felons, guys from Blackwater, private security guys to grab people out of their beds at night and at gunpoint take them to the 666 marking center so they can be forced to receive the mark of the beast? Is that how it works? That's not what he does. No guns needed. No threats, no coercion, no holding their children, dangling them over a fire, saying you're going to let them go if they don't take the mark, telling them you're going to lose your job if you don't sign here and get this mark. None of that. No, this is going to, when people go get this thing, it's going to be easy as pie. They're going to want it. They're going to want what's in them to rise to the surface, to come out. They want their inner beast to come out. Let out your inner beast. That's what they want. People are being sold to bring out this thing that is in us, like Alien, like in the movie Alien. There's a thing in this guy. It's going to pop out of his chest and he's going to be screaming. That's not how it's going to happen. No no really weird looking alien thing scratching and biting its way out of a guy's chest with blood everywhere. Nothing like that at all. It's going to be rather nice when people get this thing. You see, the false prophet has powers. And none of those powers involve threats, coercion, bombs, guns, knives, you know, holding their children over an alligator pit. None of that. That's the way they used to do it. See, this false prophet can do miracles, and he says things and causes people to do what he asks them to do. There's a special, I wish I could have time to watch it. There's a special now running, I think, on A&E about the Branch Davidian compound and David Koresh. David Koresh did not hold those people at gunpoint inside the compound and say, follow me and believe that I am Jesus Christ and let me sleep with your teenage daughter because she's going to be my wife or I'll kill you. That's not what he did. He taught them. He presented things to them, ideas. And they wanted his message. They wanted him to be the Messiah. They wanted him. By the way, he was 33 when he died. Okay, just saying. But they wanted him to be that way. Okay? And some people, apparently, that are still followers of Koresh that wish they would have died when everybody else did. How do you get people to do that? You don't hold a gun to their head. You speak to whatever's inside of them and call it out. And now they're going to follow you all the way down to the fiery grave. See, the false prophet, in verse 13, he doeth great wonders. We got that. In verse 14, he deceiveth them that dwell on the earth. He lies, but he's good at it. And God, by the way, is going to aid the false prophet because there is a great, big, all-encompassing lie, a huge deception that God is going to turn everybody over to, and they're going to believe a lie, and they're going to believe the false prophet, whatever he says, and he's going to say things that when he says them and when they're ingrained in people, never have to use a gun. No blood spilling is involved. None of that. They're going to go and they're going to get this mark. Because it says, verse 16, he causeth all, both small and great, rich and poor, free and bond. Now, if you count things in your Bible, there's six things there. Small and great, rich and poor, free and bond. Why six? It means something. That number means something. And it doesn't mean what the devil says it means. Although, kind of getting a clue from what the devil says, okay. But it means what God says it means. And so what we're going to do, we've done this before, but we're going to do it again. We're going to study what God says about this number. And then when we see things like, let me put this on the screen here. When you see things like this, you go, okay, I understand that. I get that. You may not understand what Sion means. You may not understand this particular logo. But there's three hexagons here. What do you think that means? I mean, it's pretty simple what this logo means, what it implies, what it's trying to reach down inside of you and pull out of you. You see, the false prophet, I think, his spirit, his playbook is already in operation. The way that he is going to deceive people, I believe, is the way that people are already being deceived right now, or let's say they're being suggested. They used to call it subliminal suggestion. Back,
the days when apparently, and I don't know, I never did know if this was true. I never did know if theaters back in the 50s were flashing, you know, film runs at 24 frames per second. That means every second of your life that goes by watching a movie, you've seen 24 individual pictures. Now, in 1 second of film, 24 pictures, it's easy to slide in one picture, let's say a popcorn. So you're watching 1 second of a movie and some flashed up there. What was it? I don't know. Your conscious may not have picked it up. Your subconscious is, listen, your subconscious, in spite of who you are, your subconscious is a genius. Okay? It is. Your subconscious does things that if you were aware of it, you would be going, I think my IQ is like right around 300. Okay? Your subconscious saw and analyzed below deck, below your level of thinking of it right here in the front of your brain. Your subconscious analyzes it, holds on to it for, I don't know, a few minutes, 20 minutes maybe, I don't know. I don't know if theaters did that, but I know that it's used. Subliminal messaging, blipping things in people's eyes just briefly, or various ways of coercion that you never figured out. And anybody who's good at marketing, advertising, especially on a mass level, trying to create results, trying to generate more and more income, anybody who does that has got to be a student of the human psyche, understanding how the brain works, understanding how humans make decisions, how they make their choices. The mark of the beast, my friend, is a choice. And it's not a coerced choice. That's not a real choice, is it? It is a real free will choice that people are going to make. And so, I have absolutely zero doubt that right now, people are being gently guided to making this choice. Let me tell you about Scion AV. Back in the O's, 2002, 2003, somewhere around in there, Toyota Motor Company of Toyota Japan, or wherever they are. Some guys got it, had a meeting, and they said, you know, we got all these older couples buying our cars. We got all these retirees buying our cars. We got all these 40 and ups buying Tundras. They got them buying SUVs. Got them at the... But what about these young college kids? What about these young people with new money? They're just starting out in life. They need a car, but they don't want to drive their dad's 40-foot long Cadillac from 1978, for crying out loud. Okay? So they want a car that's all on their own. So Toyota developed a spinoff company called Scion AV. The AV stands for audio visual, because Toyota understands that young people like flashing lights, large crowds, concerts, rock and roll, heavy metal, things like that. That's how they marketed their cars. They developed a brand of vehicle specifically for, let's say, the 20 and up, 20, 25, 28. You're getting to 30 years old. Now you're popping out kids. Now you need a different kind of car. You got different ideas. But for that 20-year-old crowd, they don't take life that seriously. And they might be a little bit foolish in spending their money. So we're going to sell them this car and try to get as much of it as we can. So Scion AV, the idea was, we're going to sell them a car by way of, we're going to do rock concerts, and we're going to do, you know, audiovisual stuff, and we're going to promote bands, and we're going to play music. And this is how, it was great. It worked for a while. I don't know why they're still doing it, but it worked. And they developed a specific brand of a vehicle. Let's see if I have it pulled up here. Yeah, that looked like a school milk carton. I mean, you know, what a way to bring back the good old days of, you know, milk running out of your nose at lunch. You bring back a milk carton. Here, you drive this milk carton. I think it's like, to me, stupidest looking car in the whole world. But it must have sold for a while, or maybe it's the reason why Scion went down the toilet. Okay, you decide. I want you to take a look at this little article here about the Toyota Scion concept and where it came from. I'm going to play some music here for you while you think about it. In 1999, Toyota launched Project Genesis. Why that name? Why did they pick a name? Now, the name Genesis means like a beginning. This is the beginning of something. As an effort to bring younger buyers to the Toyota marquee in the United States, Scion is marketed as a youth brand. It was introduced March 2002 at the New York Auto Show. Introduced with a lot of music. Okay, like that. But why Genesis? Why a book out of the Bible? Because remember, they're not just selling you the milk carton vehicle. They're selling something much deeper. Something that goes far down in us. That at some point needs to be sparked and brought to life. And you're looking at things here. Let me go back to this. You're looking at things here that literally are telling a story in a language that most people don't speak consciously. They do subconsciously. Like, you know, the three hexagons. 1, 2, 3. You have a number 6. And then you have another number 6. And then you have another number 6. And the idea here is, let's break this down. You have the Scion logo, which is the car they want to sell you. But it also accompanies a microphone, which is the music they're going to play. It's also accompanied with TV shows, commercials, video commercials. Maybe some YouTube, although YouTube wasn't around then. But some sort of visual aid. And all of this, see, the idea of these together is that they do fit together. That's what this here is. They're not just splattered out across the screen. They're brought together. They're brought together because you can see that very clearly they click. But there's something else speaking here. Something else. It never occurred to me until just now. Something that our Jewish friends might pick up on, because our Jewish friends know the value of the white fire and the black fire. The black fire is the printed ink on the page. The white fire is the void space around the ink spots, the white paper. The void space, according to the Kabbalist, speaks greater than what the letters and the words in ink do. And there's a void space here. It's here. Now, you may not be all hippity-hoo over this. Okay, it looks like a letter Y, and it's black. Okay, what does it mean? Well, it shows connectivity. It shows you a number. Aside from 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, the number 3. Number 3, let's say, the what does the number 3 mean? Let's go to Genesis 3. Genesis 3. By the way, you're also looking at, in the void space, okay, just kind of look at it for a minute.
It looks like a letter, doesn't it? A letter Y, but it's actually not a Y. It's a sort of a different type of symbol. It's a stylized cross. Okay? It's a form of cross. What's in Genesis 3? The serpent was more subtle than any beast of the field, right? We know that story. We also know in Genesis 3, verse 6, when the woman saw that the tree was good for food, pleasant to the eyes, desired to make one wise. Remember, there's something down deep-rooted in us. And the serpent knew how to pull that out more than any other creature. The serpent pulled out of Eve, out of her deep-rooted reptilian core, lust and pride. Lust of her flesh, lust of her eyes, pride of her life. I mean, think about it. Pride of life, owning a scion. Lust of the eyes, well, that's simple, okay? Lust of the flesh, the ears, okay? I want this, I need this, this will satisfy me at some base reproductive way, somehow, some way. What's the remedy for what happened in Genesis chapter 3? It was the cross, right? The cross represents death, crucifixion, dying, killing whatever the serpent was trying to bring to life, right? I mean, I'm getting deep with these symbols here, okay? I speak symbol. I've studied these for years. There's another symbol here we're going to talk about in just a minute. But that's what this is. That's what this represents. Okay? Now look at the word scion. Do you even know what it means? Okay? Since they mentioned the Project Genesis, okay, that's where we're going to find out what scion is all about. We're going to find it out in Genesis. But the symbol, the logo, you have a circle. Okay. Circle represents what? Circle of the earth. The only place in the whole King James Bible where the word circle is mentioned. And everybody's wanting to argue, oh, see, the earth's a circle. It's flat. You're missing it. You're missing something. Very important. The only place that the King James Bible refers to a circle is in Isaiah, and it calls it the earth. Whenever you see a circle, you're seeing a symbol for, and there are other biblical meanings. A circle represents time. And how time does what? Always comes back around, doesn't it? Just like a river. Wherever the river started, that's where it's going to end up. And it's going to start all over again. That's what that circle means. But then, looks like blades, doesn't it? Okay? Or, and I literally was putting this together while I was, you know, starting PMO. And I just ran out of time. There is a Hebrew letter. A Hebrew letter. What is it? It is the Hebrew letter Yod. The Hebrew letter Yod. Let me see if I can find an image of that. Hebrew Yod. Ah, here we go. Hebrew letter Yod. Let me put that over here. Okay. And there's variations of it, like here. Okay. Here we go. That's what I'm looking for right there. Hebrew letter Yod. Now go back to the Scion logo. Okay? The Hebrew letter Yod is big in Freemasonry. And there's an
a reason why is that its stylization is something that part of it points this direction and part of it reaches down and points this direction, just like the square and the compass. It is the first letter of the very magical, powerful tetragrammaton. Dun, dun, dun. The yod-hey-va-hey. The secret magical name of four letters that if you say it in the right way, you're going to produce God somehow. Okay? But this letter is revered in Masonry and in the Kabbalah and other places simply because it's one of those, it's the idea of connecting what's up here with what's down here. Okay? And if you think I'm making this up, when you read books and study symbols and read Masonic literature, they all say the same thing about their various symbols. Notice you have a symbol. Part of it reaches up. Part of it reaches down. It's divided, and they meet here at the center point. So let's say, let's play along here. Let's say that this pointing up here represents what Albert Pike would say, the heavens, the celestial realm, the stars. What's up above? The male, the active part. So let's say, just like the compass would. The compass would point up. The compass draws a circle. The compass represents the male, the active part. And then he would say, this part here, pointing downward. The earth, the passive part. Think of the sun and the moon actively participating in the growth of vegetation. What does the earth do? Nothing. What does the sun do? Everything. Sending down its rays so that what's in the ground can rise up and become this great tree. So, I mean, that's the idea. That's how these people talk about this stuff. So this is pointing down. This is the earth, the female, the passive part. Okay? Remember what we said, reproduction. Reptile brain, it wants to eat, wants to reproduce, wants to thrive and conquer or get away. Okay? So, this is the daddy, this is the mommy, this is the heavens, the stars, and this is the earth. They're opposites. They're the joining together of such. Spirits and flesh. If something were to happen and they could figure out a way where they could join themselves together, they would meet halfway, right? Remember that song by Black Eyed Peas, Meet You Halfway, where it shows the God, he's up in the stars, he's on a planet, and he's got like this floating triangular pyramid thing. And then it shows the woman, the singer from Black Eyed Peas. And by the way, they're opposite in color. He's black, she's white. She's on the earth. She's laying on the ground, actually. Okay, she's like Eve laying there. And he's like sitting up, you know, in a logos, in a yoga thing. Logos. And she's just laying there. Okay, he's the active, she's the passive. And they're singing this song about being in love with each other, but they're not together. So they're going to meet each other halfway. That's what that song's about. You'll watch the video and you go, okay, yeah, I get it. That's Sons of God, Daughters of Men. And that's what this is. This is why Project Genesis birthed this idea. Okay?
So, what happens when you yin and yang? What happens when you square and compass, or let's see, square and compass? What happens when you male and female? What happens when you join heaven with earth? What happens when you, when the sons of God join the daughters of men? They create something. The word Sion, you ought to find out what it means. You look it up. Okay? A Sion is a child of nobility. Child of a king, actually. A child that comes from a royal race of people. That's what a Sion is. In vegetative terms, I can't remember how it applied, but it had something to do with grafting and stuff. It was a pretty neat, if you look up the sort of the veg, that's the animal part. If you look at the vegetable part of what a Sion is, because it's used in, I can't remember. Anyway, somebody sent me a text message. It's used in that way. Well, you look it up and you'll go, okay, I see how the two ideas come together. But why did Toyota name this car, this milk box, a Sion? When you understand the logo, understand the language, understand the numbers, and what they're trying to, what language these symbols speak. When you speak that language, and you learn that language from your Bible. Your Bible will teach you everything you need to know here about this. Now, I've added in some Albert Pike and some Manly Hall and some other things. That's just background stuff. But the understanding is right here in the Bible. It is Project Genesis. From Genesis 6, the sons of God came in. Now, look at this. Look at the triangulation, the connection of three hexagons together. Okay? It's not just a fluke. Toyota did not just pull these three hexes, throw out a bunch of symbols, and they all landed together, and they went, oh, that looks cool. Anybody ever use that before? We've never seen anything like that before. They didn't do that. This symbol goes back years, hundreds, thousands of years. Why is it on a can of WD-40? Why is it? Well, that's a little embarrassing. Okay, a little medicine here for, why is it on a Bible? Why is it on a can of liquor? Why is it on protein bottles? Why is it on a... Why do they... Okay, take a look at this one. Let me go back here. You have the three hexes joined together. They actually want you in your face. They want this in you. Because it's the Evo... It's the Evo soccer ball. Evo meaning... evolution, meaning transformation, meaning change, meaning from one state to another. And folks, you and I, some trumpets are going to sound. At the last one, you and I are going out of here, but we're doing it transformed. Before that happens, or let's say maybe while that's happening, everybody down here is also evoed, transformed, changed from one state to an even far worse state, although they don't know it at the time. They don't think it at the time. They weren't told that at the time. We were told the truth up front. They're going to be lied to. By the way,
I was watching this. This got my curiosity because I remembered back in the 80s, there was a movie about how they were able to record all of a person's brain activity so that when a person put on this little helmet, he could hear, see, smell, taste, touch, feel, and respond to what the person who recorded the tape is called brainstorm. So I went back and watched the movie Brainstorm. Dun, dun, dun. That's the company that made the device that reads people's brains. The computer interface, as it were. Okay? So this goes all the way back to the 80s at least. And I would almost guarantee it goes way back farther than it. Bees do it. Bees know this symbol. But why three together? Because it corresponds with, number one, the number three, but number two, the 3 6s together. 600, 3 score, and 6. Day 6 of creation, you have beast, and you have the creation of man as well. Both of them together. All right? So, God creates beast first, then he creates man, but beast is first, man second, but beast doesn't get to be in charge. Man does. Because that which is first shall be last, and that which is last shall be first. And so God puts man in charge over all the beast. And by the way, not just, well, when I say beast, all of the land animals, cattle, goats, sheep, bears, lions, zebras, wildebeestuses, gnus, well, they're the same thing, giraffes, hippopotamuses, rhinoceroses, dinosaur, you name it, okay? They're all created onto anything that walked the land. Day 6, all right? Man, day 6. Man is given dominion over beast, day 6. But in the last day, because of man's sinfulness, what's God going to do? He's going to give beast dominion over man. Okay? We're going to lose it. I stood upon the sand of the sea. Notice this. Saw beast rise up out of the sea, having 7 heads and 10 horns. I got some new notes on them 7 heads. Okay? And his horns, 10 crowns. I'll put his head's the name of blasphemy. The beast which I saw was like unto a leopard. That was created day 6. His feet as the feet of a bear, day 6. Mouth as the mouth of a lion, day 6. Okay, you see that? Both the leopard, the bear, and the lion were created on day 6. Now, if I'm right, I think, let's see here, the dragons may have been created on day 4, I believe. Because they're flying creatures and they're water creatures. Dragons and whales and some of them are interchangeable, biblically speaking. And so I think they're created on day 5, all right? But you have the leopard, you have the bear, you have the lion. These three all created on day 6. And so think of the logo, the lion, the leopard, the bear. Lion, the leopard, the bear. Lion, leopard, the bear, okay? They're all created on day 6, and God gives them dominion over man. Or let's say the dragon gave him his power, his seat, and great authority. How many things here? 3. So what was that? What was that logo here in the void space? 1, 2, 3. Power, seat, great authority, all together. Tying it all together. Lion, leopard, bear. 600, 3 score, 6. Doesn't matter how you do it. It's all the same. That all means the same. Here's wisdom. Let him that hath understanding count the number of the beast, for it is the number of a man. Isn't that odd? Is it the number of the beast? Is it the number of man, of a man? The beast and a man. That's all. That's peculiar to me. I don't know what it means. But to me, words, every word means something in the Bible. It means exactly what God says, okay? But it means something. God didn't say the beast, but he could have meant a beast, okay? God would say, well, you know, when I say the beast,
You don't have to get so nitpicky with it. I mean, I just any beast, a beast. No, he said the beast. And he said, he didn't say it was the number of man, implying man species. A man, a singular individual, specific man. What man is that? Don't know yet. If I knew, I would tell you. Okay? But if I knew, probably everybody would know too. Now, I have seen, I don't know how many movies, and I start noticing things. I start noticing things about the use of dialogue in a movie that doesn't necessarily have a whole stinking lot to do with the movie, but the dialogue is included nonetheless. And I'll give you any one of you out there to undertake a project. I'll give you a project if you want it. You ready? You want some work? In fact, I'll give you two of them. The number of movies. And I'm saying, I'm not talking go all the way back to 1930, look at every John Wayne Western and move forward to the 40s. I'm saying, let's say in the last 20 years, the number of movies where a person in the movie was referred to, whether it was done deliberately or whether someone looked at someone and said the name Jesus Christ. I'll give you an example. The first Matrix movie. Duh. Neo. He's got some computer code that he came up for with somebody. And the guy calls him. So you got my code? Yeah, I got the code. He's got it hidden in a book. And so the guy knocks on the door. And he says, I'm here to get my computer code. So Neo pulls it out of this book, hands it to him. Guy hands him his money, and the guy says to Neo, you're my savior, man. You're my own personal Jesus Christ. Okay. Listen, if you think that the Matrix trilogy was just about science fiction, boy, do you not get it. Okay. And I watched the Matrix movies, I don't know, probably 40 times. And there's still levels in there that I'm not even sure the Wachowski brothers slash sisters, because both of them have turned transgendered, I'm not even sure they were aware of, okay? But that whole trilogy is about religious symbolism. And Neo is the savior. He is a Jesus Christ. Don't think Jesus Christ the way we think Jesus Christ. Think Jesus Christ as a figurative ideology in a movie. A savior, a hero, one who sacrifices himself for the benefit of everybody else. One who dies and is resurrected, as was Neo in this movie. When Neo first presents himself to, let me do this while I'm just blabbing. When Neo first presents himself to the Oracle, when she looks at him, she says, yeah, you're not the one. At least not in this life. Or something to that effect. Okay? It's interesting. Because it's only after Neo dies at the end of the movie, shot, and Trinity, number three, the woman, wakes him up with a kiss. That ring a bell in any kind of fable? Wakes him up with a kiss. He comes back to life. Now, oh, he's the one, all right. He's numero uno, Jesus Christ. He has powers now. He can fly. He can stop bullets. He can heal people, bring them back to life. See what I'm saying? The first, what was it? Terminator movie. What's the hero's name? John Connor.
and he's the only one who can save humanity from the terrible machines, right? J.C. Okay? Follow that. But just in random talk, somebody may be going, look at somebody and go, Jesus Christ, what happened to you? Follow that. Follow that. That's not just random dialogue. That's not just interjecting cursing in a movie. It means something. So I'll give you a project. Movies where someone plays literally a Jesus Christ figure, or someone is labeled Jesus Christ somehow, some way. The Man of Steel. The Man of Steel. He's 33. He's sitting right in front of a Jesus picture, thinking about whether or not he should sacrifice himself for the sake of man. The picture is, of course, Jesus in the Garden of Gethsemane doing the same thing. Okay? And, of course, he dies. And, of course, he's resurrected. And he's going to save the world. And he's the bridge. And he comes out of the Kryptonian spaceship, falling down to earth like a cross, for crying out loud. You see what I'm saying? Again, don't think of Jesus Christ the way we think of Jesus Christ. Think of him as a mythical, legendary, heroic type figure. And there are many other Jesuses. Quetzalcoatl. Quetzalcoatl is the fiery flying serpent with feathers, the plumed serpent. That's what Quetzalcoatl means. And he sacrifices himself for the benefit of his people, and he is depicted in pictograms with a cross. But don't think of the cross the way we think of the cross. Think of it in its occult form and what it means, what it represents, i.e. chromosome. Which, by the way, let's go back here. That void space, yeah, it makes a chromosome. What kind? A Y chromosome, depicting what gender? Male. Because that's the only difference between us and them. The other species with all X's is the entrance of the Y chromosome. Okay? So, think of it that way. Think of a legend. The movie Elysium. The guy in Elysium is the one who's going to rise to the heavens. And he is the one who is going to bring down to earth immortality from the star people. If you've seen the movie, you know what I'm talking about. He is specifically referred to in this movie as a legend. You're a legend. Boom. I know what it means. Okay? By the way, if you've seen Elysium, how he gets, sick, how he's going to die, he's a worker in his factory. What does he do? Get his arm broke or something like that? Anyway, he's going to lose his job. He says, no, I can do this. They send him into this pod where all these robots are being made. And these robots, before they can be released or whatever, they have to be irradiated. So they zap them with this massive amount of radiation. Well, he gets caught in there. And so he gets irradiated. He's like that. And he's like dead. Did you ever notice the robot that comes and picks him up and pulls him out of there? Did you ever notice that robot? Go notice it. It's got a number on it. It's the number 72. 72 is the number of the stones in the unfinished pyramid?
Great Seal. 72 pillars in the National Archives building. 72 stars surrounding the deified George Washington Capitol Dome. Why 72? Why are there 72 columns in the, what is that, where Michelangelo drew the Sistine Chapel? And they see the 72 columns center the idea of God touching man, reaching down and making connection with man. That's not God giving Adam life. God blew in Adam's nostrils a breath of life. That's not what that scene is depicting. It's God making contact with man, surrounded by 72 pillars. In Genesis 10, we have a list of every tribe and every family on the earth. There are precise, I had it counted wrong. There's precisely 72 tribes, 72 families, 72 DNA types. Did you know that Osiris, when he was murdered, his coffin was carried by, guess how many pallbearers? Yep, you got it, 72. Do you know that all 72 families on the earth carry something inside them? Something that is dormant? Something that is latent? Something so down deep in their core that they don't even know it's there. You know what it's called? There's a word for it in the Bible. One of the words for it in the Bible is Romans 7. And it's called, here's what Paul said it was called. In verse 18, and that's like 6 plus 6 plus 6, isn't it? For I know that in me, that is, in my flesh, dwelleth no good thing. All of us have it in us. All of us have in us something that was planted there. Planted not by, you know, some evil thing, you know, reproducing with us. Something that was planted there by a voice, a serpent, speaking 46 words to Eve, putting something in her chromosomes that's there, and it's still there. And I don't like it. I want it crucified. You get it now? See, whatever's in me, that is in my flesh, is in my chromosomes. It's in my DNA. This is why I want it dead. I want it killed. I want it gone. I don't want it to live. I wished I hadn't passed it down to my children, but sorry, girls, you got it. And we all have it in us. And so, the Bible is the reason why I have this verse up here. We have the sons of God. They mated with the daughters of men. And verse 4, there were giants in the earth in those days. So I just believe it. I believe. And you don't hear my congregation going, there were Nephilim back then. Yeah, that's the Nephilim. They were talking about the Nephilim mother. Now, that may be the Hebrew word that's there. But it's translated this way for a reason. God wants you to understand who these were and what they were doing. There were giants in the earth in those days. Why were they called giants? It's because they were like 6 cubits, right? And some of them 9 cubits. Some of them probably taller than that. The giants in the earth in those days, and also after that, when the sons of God, you believe it or not, came in unto the daughters of men. You believe that or not? And they bare children to them. Remember what this means. Sons of God came in unto the daughters of men, and they bear children to them. The same became mighty men of old, men of renown. So,
we have a famous giant in the Bible named Anak, A-N-A-K.
The Sumerians called a race of hybrid beings the Anunnaki. See, does that ring a bell? Anunnaki, Anak. They were talking about the same thing. See, the Bible's going to tell you the truth every time. So you had the Anunnaki. The Anunnaki were a race of giant men who sprung forth from Anak. These Anunnaki, the sons of Anak, were the ones in Numbers 13 that the 12 spies saw in the land of Canaan. When they saw them there, they came back and they said, do you know what's in there? All of these people are giants. And we saw there the sons of Anak. Do you know what a substitute word could have been? And I'm not trying to change the Bible in any way, but I'm just telling you that one of the words for sons of Anak is Sion. We saw there the sons of the great king, Anak. That's what the word Sion means. Someone who is of the lineage of nobility or royalty. And that's who the sons of Anak were. So, who wants a project? It's going to take a while. You're going to have to watch movies. So start with Elysium. You get to the point where the guy says, "You're a legend, man. You're the legend." Bingo. Okay, there's other movies. I've heard it. I keep hearing it. Man, you're like a legend, man. You're like, or you hear stories of men of old time, a race of people, or a king in a faraway land, or an ancient, you know, race of people, this and that and the other. They're telling you something. They're telling you the mythology version of Genesis 6. The sons of God, the daughters of men, the same became mighty men which were of old, men of renown, men of legend. Okay? 1 Samuel 17, we have the champion, which Joel Osteen's Lakewood Church opening song says you have one of those in you that needs to be discovered, because you have the champion in you and you don't know it. So discover. By the way, I had a Joel Osteen sandwich for lunch and it was awesome. Okay, it was cheesy and full of bologna. Okay. That's fun. That's I really did have a cheesy bologna sandwich. The champion out of the camp of the Philistines named Goliath of Gath, whose height was, look at here, 6. Why was he 6? Why did the Bible tell you 6? The Bible's connecting Goliath with this number so that you can connect that number with stuff like this here. Okay? Which I'm going to talk about in a minute. Why was he 6 cubits? Why did his spearhead weigh? His spearhead was not 600 shekels of iron. It weighed 600 shekels of what? Iron. What kingdom would he belong to? An iron one. His brothers, who were born to the giant in Gath, right? So that means that all of these offspring were scions. The giant in Gath, that might have been, let's see, who was that? Was that Og? I don't remember. But there was a giant in Gath, of the land of the Philistines. He had five sons together. Goliath was one of them. He had a brother. You go find this. King James Bible is the only one that says this. And he had four brothers. And these four brothers were killed by some of David's mighty men. David killed Goliath. David's mighty men, one of them killed the brother of Goliath. King James Bible gets it right. But apparently, at least one of these brothers, and we're not told the rest of them do, but at least one of these brothers had six fingers on both hands, six toes each foot. Okay? The Bible is equating these legendary scions with the number six, showing you. It's prophesying. Remember what a circle means. The river, where the river starts, when it goes around, it ends right back up there. And so Solomon used that in Ecclesiastes 1 to tell us that that which was, even if it was in the past, well, that's going to come back around again. Okay? The thing that hath been is the thing that shall be, and there is no new thing under the sun. The beast is not a new thing under the sun. He already hath been. That's the meaning of the circle. When you see the serpent's tail in the mouth making a circle, it's showing you something. It's showing you this is a symbol for the beast because he was and he is not and yet is. He's coming back around. Take a look at old Shaq, who was... What does Shaq do for a living? Well, right now, he's a pitch man, okay? What did Shaq do for a living? Play basketball. Why did Shaq play basketball? Why did he not play... Why did he not ride horses? He is a what? Giant. And they picked him to pitch chafing cream, right? Because, you know, us big guys, we chafe. And we need powder there. But if you look at the old Gold Bond bottles, they don't look like this one anymore. They're different. Gold Bond Ultimate, men's essentials every day. And notice, six hexagons surrounded by one in the middle. And one of them is different. One of them's gold. Gold Bond. The verse here, it's one of three places in the Bible you find the number 603 scored six. The weight of gold that came to Solomon in 1 year. Apparently this was a tax or something like that he had. And for some reason, Solomon ended up with 603 score and six talents of gold. Exactly. Now, if you think that this just shows up in the Bible and it doesn't mean anything else other than this, well, you're in kindergarten concerning Bible. So we get you to first grade, get you move up a little bit, you'll understand it. God did not put anything in his word that doesn't mean something. I mean, why would God say this? That's what I started asking questions. Why started studying numbers? Why do I have to know that David picked up five smooth stones to kill Goliath when he only needed one? Why do I have to know that? I mean, what was the temperature that day? We don't know. Was it cloudy? We don't know. Was it raining? We don't know. Was there a carnival in town? We don't know. The reason why we don't know is that it doesn't mean anything prophetically. Little details like that, the Bible just sticks in there. It's prophetic. It's there, and it's there for a reason. One of these days, God's people are going to go, I get it. I know why he said that now. I get it. Now, I think there's a connection between that and gold. Gold Bond and they use the hexagons surrounding a hexagon. That's like triple hexagons, right? Six of them. And by the way, the hexagon in the middle is the void hexagon, the silent hexagon. It's not really there, but it's there, right? Okay, so it's indicating to you that there is a secret here, but we're not really saying it. That's the language of symbols. That's the language that Babylon speaks. Why? Because in Genesis 11, all of man's languages was all like, now everybody speaks a different language and nobody can understand anybody. Babel. The spirit of Babylon is men cannot understand each other when they're talking with their mouth. But when we use the language of symbols, we're all pointing to every nation in the world can speak symbols and numbers. Because while God mixed up the languages of the earth, he left math intact. Numbers are the same. So a lot of symbolism and the language of symbolism is heavily tied into the symbolism of numbers, including the number six. And again, the only true 100% never wrong source of understanding these, King James Bible. That's the only place you're going to get it from and get it right. So there's got to be a connection between Solomon's 666 talents of gold. Gold bond, man up, right? Using the giant to sell it to you. And there's a story involving gold that to me, it just sticks out as, I think this means something. It's in Exodus 32. Now, I'm not going to spend a lot of time with it, but you go study this out. The idol, the calf that, you know, Aaron said, Lord, or Moses, funny as saying, everybody threw their earrings in the pot, and this calf jumped out. I never saw anything like that in my life. Now, I don't know if Aaron's telling the truth or not. Could be. But the interesting part about this is Aaron presented the calf to Israel and said, these be thy gods, plural. Plural. And what did Moses do with their gods? He made them eat it. The children of Israel had to ingest their gold god. Gold as a symbol of the Antichrist, I think it's there in 1 Kings 10. I think that's got to be a connection. Why is it 600? Why wasn't it not 637.5 talents of gold? Why was it 603.6 talents of gold? It's got to be a connection. God has to be tying gold in with the mark of the beast. You have a story where they are ingesting their god. That's like a communion service, right? Where they're eating the god. In the doctrine of transubstantiation, you eat the god. You eat the god to turn into, guess what? The god. Okay? You and the god now are together. You're at one mint together because you ate the god and now you're the god. Moses made them eat their god. Concerning gold, think of alchemy. Alchemy. Alchemy says that we can turn lead or any other really cheap material, you know, like electronics you buy from China, okay? We can take lead
And through processing it through seven phases.
Why seven? That's a different day, a different number. Think of Islam and their seven heavens. Think of when you go to Mecca, you have to swirl around the Kaaba seven times. Why? Why seven? Why are there seven planets? Why are there seven chakras? Why are there seven levels of hell? Not really, but in mythology, why? Why was Snow White accompanied by seven dwarves? You see, I'm not making that up. Snow White and the Seven Dwarves is an alchemical parable, a legend of a king who's dead and a mystery woman who can bring him back to life again. And the Seven Dwarves, what is their job? What do they do for a living? They're miners. Hi-ho, hi-ho. What are they mining for? Gold. Okay? So you have the seven alchemical dwarves, which are the seven processes between Solvay and Coagula that turns lead into gold. But it's not really lead, and it's not really gold. See, gold then is the symbol for immortality, because their god is an immortal. He never dies. Or if he does die, he's going to come back to life again. That's the idea. Because in alchemy, they were searching for the elixir of life. The elixir of life that would transform humans to immortals, changing man to gods. That takes us right back to Genesis 3 and what Satan said what could happen. Ye shall not surely die, but in the day ye eat thereof, ye, lead, shall be as gods, gold, knowing good and evil. Okay? You know this show, don't you? Golden Girls? Surely I'm not going to pick on that. Did you know that some of the names for the mystery Babylon in the occult is, Sophia. Sophia is the goddess of wisdom, goddess of occult wisdom, occult knowledge, the goddess of mysteries and concealing things to people who shouldn't know, and revealing them to only the elite or the elect or the people who are transformed enough to receive it. One of her names is Sophia, which is one of the names of the girls on the Golden Girls. Another concept in the mystery religion is that of the rose. You have the rose, see that? You have a rose compass on just about every old map, a rose compass. Why? What does every map have on it? A legend. Dun, dun, dun. And all of the rose compasses, they point in usually two directions, north and east. And on every rose compass, there are 32 directions. Okay, 32 directions. Surrounding the 33rd point in the middle. Okay? When something is done sub rosa is an old term meaning secret, quiet, mystery. Sub rosa means under the roses, meaning we can't tell everybody what it is that we're telling or scheming or concocting or conniving. We can't tell everybody our plans. It's sub rosa. Rosalind Chapel, the Roseline Chapel in Scotland. The whole ceiling is covered with stone roses. What does that tell you? That everything in Rosalind Chapel is sub rosa. It's under the roses. It's secret. It's quiet. The symbol for Beauty and the Beast It's a rose, isn't it? Beauty, a woman, and a beast getting married together? Are you kidding me? A legend of the Beauty and the Beast, a legend of the Beast, Sub Rosa. So we have Sophia, we have Rose on here, and then we got the little slut lady on here, the one who's always Miss Hot Pants all the time. Remember what her name was? Blanche Devereaux. Okay? Now, of course, her character is from Louisiana. She's a Southern Louisiana girl. So she would have a French-sounding name, Blanche. A lot of women are named Blanche, right? Blanche Devereaux. Little French-Canadian, Cajun name. Only they didn't get the name Blanche Devereaux. The people who made this TV show. I'm not making this up. People who made this TV show. Rose, Sophia, Blanche Devereaux. Blanche Devereaux, they didn't get the name from some woman down in New Orleans that they met. They got the name Blanche Devereaux from an alchemist who lived in the time before Leonardo da Vinci. Nicholas Flamel, whose name shows up in the Harry Potter series. Nicholas Flamel shows up, and he's like this immortal. He found the Fountain of Youth, by the way, the Philosopher's Stone or the Sorcerer's Stone. He found it. And according to, I think, the Harry Potter book, the first one, he's like 700 years old. Okay? He drank the elixir. He found the transmutation concept of transmuting lead to gold or mortals to immortals. And he now found the secret to not dying. Okay? Nicholas Flamel's name shows up on a list. So does Leonardo da Vinci. This comes from the Da Vinci Code, but Dan Brown got it from some pseudo-investigation that was done in a book called, what was it called? Something. Anyways, about the Holy Grail. They found what they thought was a secret society in France called the Priory of Zion. Priory of Zion had a list of grandmasters. It's a secret society. It had a list of grandmasters. And the list of grandmasters included Nicholas Flamel, Leonardo da Vinci, and Blanche Devereaux. I couldn't make it up if I wanted to. Whoever made this TV show, Golden Girls, they knew something. They knew something. They were trained, instructed in something. Something that they had studied in college. Something that is part of their overall psychic, mystical, religious training in their life. I don't know. But to develop as a TV show, a show about independent, overpowering, domineering women, one who is blatantly the mother of all harlots, who's happened to be named after a famous Rosicrucian, a famous alchemist named Blanche Devereaux. And then they name the other ones Rose, Sophia. I don't know what the other name was. It's just too much for me. I can't go, well, maybe that's just an accident. I don't think so. I don't think so. So you get my idea here. That there's more to media, TV shows, movies, commercials, YouTube videos. There's more to that than meets the eye. It goes way past the eye, into the brain, into the subconscious, drawing something out of us that lies dormant inside of us. Something like, what do you see here? What do you see? Just look at this picture. What do you see? You see it, don't you? You see it. Some of you are going, I see a refrigerator and a stove. What's your point? Well, if that's all you see, Why don't you go watch the Golden Girls while I explain to everybody else what's going on here? You have a woman. Symbol. Symbolism. I mean, if we're going to talk symbolism, she's a woman, yeah. The flowing robe. She's not dressed in a pantsuit. She's not a businesswoman. What do the flowing robes suggest?
They're not just hanging there either.
She's a spirit, isn't she? An angel. She has powers. There's three lines here. And what does she make out of them? And the first time I saw that, I went, okay, can't be. This is a magazine. Okay? Whirlpool. Wants your kitchen appliances to give you a holistically technological lifestyle. Holistic.
Sort of.
Holistic gives the idea that we're not just dealing with flesh and blood and stainless steel. It's more spiritual than that, right? It's more holistic than that. We're not just going to, if you go to holistic chiropractor, they're not just going to pop your back and take an x-ray and make you come back 20 times. They're going to pop your back, take an x-ray, make you come back 20 times, and let's poke some holes in you. Let's put a candle in your ear and burn wax out. Let's talk about your chakras. Okay? That's how they're going to deal with you holistically. They're not just going to deal with the mechanics of bone and tissue. They're going to deal with the energies that might be in you. And in this particular ad, I mean, you're right when you see a six, and it's deliberate. It's because Whirlpool wants you to understand now that their appliances work on something beyond you just opening the door to see what's in the oven or the refrigerator. Now you're going to have a new ability to be in contact, to be in touch with your appliances, to be able to control them without you touching them. See, touching is a sense, right? And how many do we have? Taste, touch, smelling, hearing, seeing. The five inputs. This is how our brain makes communication with the outside world, right? This is how it happens. But what if there's something in us? Something else? What if there's something written in our DNA that if it was activated could give us the ability to receive information into our brain beyond the five senses? So you know what I'm talking about, right? A sixth sense. And before the 21st century, it was all done by devils. Okay, devils, people who they said had a sixth sense, they didn't really have a sixth sense. They had a familiar spirit. A familiar spirit would go, guy is holding a two of clubs. And the guy would go, two of clubs. I would be going, oh, it's a two of clubs. How did he know that? Oh, wow, you could see that? And this familiar spirit's going, you ready for the next one? Okay, how many fingers have I got behind my back? And the familiar spirit goes, three. Now you just changed it to two. You had three, and now you changed it to two. Oh, goodness, this guy can... That's how it was done. Uri Geller, went around to, and there's some people saying, like Ray, James Randi, who said Geller was a fraud. He may have been, but even at that,
It takes a spirit to help you be a really good fraud. But anybody who says they have psychic powers, they don't have psychic powers. They have a familiar spirit that gives them information about things that they wouldn't normally know. So they call that a sixth sense. That was before the 21st century. 21st century now has its own version of that. Remember Mindstorm? Remember that movie I was talking about with the hexagon logos at the beginning? The company that made the device that could read everything in your brain and record it and then transmit it to somebody else. Now we live in the 21st century and they're working on neural lace. Ways that your brain can receive and or send information, or let's just say receive information, beyond touching it, tasting it, smelling it, seeing it, or hearing it. A sense number six. Okay? FLIR. Look at their logo. The world, that's what they call themselves, the world's sixth sense. And you know what FLIR means, right? Forward-looking infrared. And that's how they got their name. It's a spin-off company. And they make forward-looking infrared cameras for police, FBI, CIA, NSA, military, news choppers will have FLIR on it so they can spot the guy running away from the cops in the middle of the night. And cops are going, well, I can't find the guy. And the guy at the helicopter is going, you're standing right next to him. Reach over and grab him. Okay, they can see that because they can see something that the normal eyes cannot see. They can see his heat signature all around his body and even where his feet prints were because it changed the temperature of the ground where he stood temporarily. They can track the guy. The world's sixth sense. But now we're getting farther than that. Drone technology and who knows what else. The ability to see through walls. Real or not real? Real. I can't remember how they do it, but let's just say 5 years from now, you're going to have a cell phone with an attachment that lets you see images of people in a room through their wall. That's freaky. Okay? So we'll go beyond that. Ways of connecting and putting in, and I know I'm just like, is my bell rung yet? Is my music going off? Probably has. I need to shut up. If it hasn't, it will. Ways that they're going to be able to send information into the human brain that bypasses sight, smell, taste, hearing, touch, literally giving mankind a sixth sense, not to just be able to pick out a card behind somebody's back, but to be able to read emails, to be able to read the entire volume of Wikipedia anytime you want. As fast as you want. It's not science fiction. It's not a cult. This is real. Science now is in the age of doing that which was supernatural 20 years ago and 100 years ago. Now it's science fact. Okay? I have a lot more. 666alert.net. There it is right here on the bottom of your screen. Right there. Okay? Go to it. I just put in a post right at the beginning of PMO. I added about 4 pictures today. If you see something, say something. Send it to me. PastorMikeOnline@gmail.com. put it across the big title, 666 Alert. That way I'll know that it's for the 666 Alert website, and we'll try to get it up there, okay? Hexagon sixes everywhere. You send it to me. We'll look at it, all right? Hey, let's talk about it again Thursday, unless, of course, you know, the end of the world happens or something like that. Anyway, you know the reason why we do what we do. Go to Titus 2:13 Hope and check out the Red River Prophecy Conference. Donate for this year's conference. They need help. Okay? They need help. Okay? And if you love the conference, I help them every year. You help as well. God bless you. We'll see you.